As I sit alone in this desolate, burned-out cornfield writing these notes, I'm haunted by the thought that I may be the last living human on this earth. I reassure myself that no matter how complete the Martians' attempt at extermination, there must be, somewhere, of the millions of men, women, and children that once populated this earth, there must be survivors. Dare I hope that my wife, my friends, all those that once made up my comfortable, once secure life, dare I hope that they are among them? I must not dwell on that. I must keep these records objective. They may be needed to fill the gaps in written history in the future, if indeed there is a future for mankind. It also gives me something to do, to help me maintain what's left of my sanity. Using the sun as a compass, I spend the days walking to the southeast, toward Chicago. I can't say why. Morbid curiosity, perhaps. If there are any survivors, they must be there. With so many hiding places, surely some manage to escape the Martians' wrath. A fine black dust litters the ground. At first, I thought it to be ash, but I am now miles from where there was any burning. It doesn't look like ash under close inspection. Perhaps a simple taste test. No. Better collect a sample and save it for possible analysis later. On the third day, I stumble upon the Kennedy Expressway. I used to hate the thing. All the noise, traffic, and pollution. Now, I feel as if I found an old, lost friend. A friend that would lead me right into the city. I climb the ramp to walk on the elevated pavement, not prepared for what I find. A sea of still automobiles pointed in all directions, many mangled in collisions, with human corpses beside them sprawled on the ground, ripening in the sun. I turn and run to the street below. I can follow it from down here. Later, I come upon a strange cloud of black fog, a black square hovering over some mobile homes. I spot a Martian machine above the treetops. Quickly, I jump behind some bushes and watch as one of its metal arms rises and sprays the air with a jet of steam that causes the fog to solidify into minute, dust-like particles falling to the ground like a bizarre black snow. Astonished, I take the sample of dust collected early out of my pocket and throw it away. I've been watching the Martians for several hours, afraid to move lest I attract their attention. I'll stay hidden until darkness permits my continuing. My fear of these creatures greater than ever. For now I know why, of all the countless people massacred by the Martians, so few bodies lay in the streets and fields. With each step I scan the horizon, ready to throw myself to the ground at the first sign of a Martian. I have seen them feed. It's been a day and a half since I've eaten. I have passed many potential meals in abandoned houses and grocery stores, either because of the ominous black dust that covered everything or because I was sickened at the sight of partially consumed bodies. Now I'm weakening with hunger. The nuts and berries I had in the woods were not enough. As I approach the city, I expect to find more stores. Some of them should be safe. My prayers are answered. A little supermarket in a town I can't identify. No black dust or dead bodies anywhere. I go inside. Cans on the shelves. Not many, but in them I find meat and fruit. Food, finally, I gulp it down. Spam never tasted so good. What was that? A noise from the front near the checkout counter. Who's there? I shout, half hoping to get no response. A shadow rises from behind the cash register. A man, A man in a tattered army uniform carrying a large knife.
Don't move, man.
I mean you no harm. I just came in for something to eat. I'll leave.
No, you don't have to leave. You can stay. You're the first live person I've seen in a week. I ain't gonna hurt you.
All right.
Where are you from?
Evanston, originally. I just walked from Elgin.
Elgin? Damn! I was up there that first night, fighting them things, like something out of a monster movie.
I was there, too. It was horrible. I fear it's the end of the human race.
Nah, man. We'll bounce back. We got to. We just got to get organized, get our act together. Getting so now all a Martian got to do is go a couple of miles to find a bunch of people running around all confused. A spray of that poison gas and bam, lunch.
But what hit can we do?
All we need is to find a few good men. No weaklings, no flabby out of shape.
Like me?
Nah, you sound like an educated man, a smart man. We're going to need people like you to learn us the way.
Learn the way?
Yeah, all we got to do is get one. Just one of those machines. Can you see that? A machine like that? With that laser ray left and right? And no Martians in it, but men. Men that learn how.
A chance to fight back.
More than that, we turn it on the Martians. Wipe them out. And then we turn it on people. Bring the world to its knees. Hell, they half beat already.
That's your plan?
Yeah, and I'm giving you a chance to... Hey, where are you going?
Not to your world. Goodbye.
For 2 days after my encounter with the stranger, I wander southeast to Chicago, unsure of my progress until... Finally, I recognize the once bustling communities of Rogers Park, Edgewater, and Uptown. Now they are silent. Their residents long since evacuated or consumed. On Sheridan Road, near Wilson Avenue, resting against a building, a bicycle. I climb on it and decide to ride the rest of the way. Why I felt compelled to get to the loop, I'll never know. I can't imagine why I'd be in any hurry. I turn east at Montrose and over to the park. I'm startled by the number of cars on Lakeshore Drive. Thousands. There are cars on the bike paths in Lincoln Park. I have to weave left and right to avoid them. I see the colorful trees of autumn contrasted by the blackened scars left by the terrible laser blast. In the distance, I see the Hancock Center and the Ritz-Carlton, appearing unscarred from my vantage point. At North Avenue, a collision with a large stone renders the bike useless, so I proceed on foot. To my left, more evidence of Martian presence. A huge, round depression in the sand, 3 feet deep and several feet in diameter. A footprint left by one of the awesome machines. With a tinge of fear, I realize the potential danger and I dash across the drive where the trees, bushes, and tall buildings might offer hiding places should a Martian come along. In the gutters, there are traces of the black dust that I now know once was poison fog. I can imagine the horrible death of the thousands who must have been here when the Martians came. As I cross the Michigan Avenue Bridge, I see more of the same black dust floating in clumps in the river. To the west, the Dearborn Street Bridge ripped from its foundations. Strange. All the damage I had seen in the city so far was just that one bridge. All the buildings, streets, even the old water tower, symbolic survivor of a earlier disaster over a century ago, stood intact. It's becoming obvious that the Martians' purpose is to eliminate the people only. Perhaps they might have use for the buildings and structures. Could this be the reason for their merciless, pernicious attack on us? Is this why they want to take our world away from us? Could it be that their planet is crowded, polluted, devoid of resources? Perhaps our careless consumption gave them the illusion of plenty. If that be the case, we may be witnesses to the most macabre joke ever imagined. I pass an increasing number of automobiles in a frozen traffic jam, some of them crushed flat, probably under the metal feet of the Martians. I make my way past a seemingly endless parade of empty shops and restaurants, most with windows smashed and shelves cleared. South, past the Art Institute, I meet up with a pack of wild dogs. I stop cold and watch silently as they scurried across the street, growling angrily at me. One of them has a piece of brown meat in its jaws. Perhaps they think I'd be a fresh competitor. I wait and let them pass. I've no desire to challenge them. What's that? In the sky, above the almost naked trees in Grant Park, a flock of black birds circling. My curiosity is getting the better of me. I find myself running towards them across 11th Street. Suddenly, a flash in the treetops. The gleaming, cowlish head of one of the Martian machines. Terrified, I throw myself into some bushes and hold my breath. God, I hope he didn't see me. But wait. The machine is silent, motionless. Cautiously, I move along on hands and knees and peek through the bushes and see one of the Martians hanging limp from his machine while the black birds tear bits of brown flesh from its dead body. The last entry was made almost a month ago now. I read in this morning's paper that preliminary results of autopsies on the dead alien show that they died of severe infection, an infection caused by viruses believed to be associated with a disease that we call the common cold. It seems so strange now as I sit here in my office here on campus with the now world-famous Dearborn Observatory visible from my window. With all our technology and military might, the power to destroy our world many times over, it was a virus, something even smaller than a germ, an organism that we've tried to exterminate for generations, the humblest creature on the face of the earth. It was a virus that preserved man's place as master of his world. Shall we learn from our experience? Will we now show more respect for our world and for our fellow inhabitants? Do we now realize the fragility of our existence? Will we cherish and try to conserve our resources? I look out at the roads and highways and see all the dead, smashed cars have been replaced by new ones belching hydrocarbons into the air. I read of hordes of people crowding museums to gape at the Martians' machines on display. And the nations of the world in bitter dispute over who shall own laser weapons. I fear the worst is yet to come.
Hello, I'm Steve Bellinger. Perhaps the greatest misconception shared by all humans is the belief that we are God's greatest creation, the ultimate beings of the universe. We marvel at our intellect and our ability to communicate with accuracy. In doing so, we ignore our evolutionary relatives, such as the whale and the dolphin, whose intellect may indeed equal or surpass ours. Because we're unable to communicate with them, we assume inferiority on their part. All available information does tend to support our thinking. Of course, we once thought that the sun and the moon were the entire universe, and we also thought that the earth was flat. We could indeed be the ultimate of God's creatures, but then again, maybe not. We have been wrong before. Thank you for listening. And now our cast, in order of appearance. Dr. Pearson was played by Jim Keith, Jack Woods by Dave Whiskeyman, Joanne Debs by Susan Seigen, Dr. Shaw by Lee Webb, Carl Phillips by Neil Boyle, Tom Gilbert by Ed Wallen, Bill Desmond by Steve Bellinger, Commander Smith by Lee Webb, the reporter in Waukegan by Ray Miller, the BBC announcer by Jim Keith, Silver Surfer by Dave Whiskeyman, Lady Jane by Pat Berger, the announcer on the Hancock Building and the man in the supermarket by Ed Wallen. We'll start a new life together. Day of the Martians was produced, directed, and readapted for radio by Steve Bellinger. Original music, Love Me Once, written by George T. Corbis and sung by Teddy Corbis. New Life Together, also written by George T. Corbis and sung by Francesca. This has been a Stephen A. Bellinger production.